is crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on the Number Fire Podcast Network and NumberFire.com. My name is Jim Saunas. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for Number Fire. Brandon, week 17 is already here. It's interesting because we have at least some teams that have something on the line here, but as always, a little bit of chaos in week 17. How are you doing today?
Yeah, chaos is a good word, and I think the word that I would use to describe how I'm doing is flexible, because I'm just prepping to have all of my best laid plans go awry come Sunday morning whenever some unforeseen player sits, some unforeseen player starts, someone, you know, raises up from the grave to come back and have a great role. So I think that flexible is the right word for this week.
Yeah, you kind of have to be. Like, I think in general, we're going to, you know, be focusing on playoff teams or teams that are trying to get into the playoffs. But at some point, you know, those teams are going to be priced up enough where you can't just do that for every roster slot on every roster that you build. You're going to have to take some risks, and we'll talk about, you know, where those risks may be worth it throughout this podcast for today and where you may want to be a little bit wary. We'll run down the podcast rundown for this week in just a second. But first, quick reminder, we do have another drawing for our Number Fire Podcast Network giveaway on iTunes. If you want to win Number Fire Premium for an entire year, just go to iTunes, search for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, leave a comment and rate the podcast, and you are then entered to win Number Fire Premium for an entire year. This is only for people who do not have Number Fire Premium already. So if you have Premium, we appreciate ratings and reviews already, and very much do still, but this would only be eligible for those who do not already have Number Fire Premium. So make sure you go to iTunes, get that submission in, and we'll draw, I believe, next week during the Wild Card Weekend preview podcast. We are still doing preview pods throughout the playoffs and throughout even for the Super Bowl as well. So make sure you check those out by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Now for today, a little bit of a different format for the podcast, because week 17 is a different beast. We are going to start things off by looking at the playoff implications for each game and for each team, which teams are gunning for it and which teams may be resting starters. Then we'll go through the generic injury section. Then we'll do just three trends apiece for today as opposed to our usual four. There will be no section on bookmaker info. Then we'll wrap things up as usual with our plays at each position. Brandon, are you ready to kick off a hectic week 17 slate?
I don't know if I'm ready, but I think I have to be. You're just a lot to go over.
Never ready. Yeah, that's fair. It's just it's going to hit you, and we'll see if we survive. So let's go through the playoff scenarios here. We want to take a look at which teams are going to potentially be resting starters. The Saints have locked up the one seed in the NFC. Head coach Sean Payton didn't say they wouldn't rest their starters. He basically talked around it. They're going to play guys who are not starters. So I would lean towards avoiding most Saints, even at home.
Yeah, I always love the, you know, we're just going to go out there and do our best. Or, sure. You know, if you're healthy, you're playing. But, you know,
it's JenniferLawrence.gif. Like, sure. Okay. Sure, buddy. I believe. Cowboys, same thing. They'll be the fourth seed in the NFC. They can't move from there. Jerry Jones said they'd play the guys, but, you know, Dak's not playing that whole game. Zeke's not playing that whole game. Mari Cooper's probably not. I'd avoid Dallas, too. The Seattle Seahawks have very little on the line here. They're currently the five seed. If they win, they will keep that. If they lose and the Vikings win, then Seattle will be the sixth seed, which means playing Chicago, most likely, as opposed to playing in Dallas. Head coach Pete Carroll said they were playing it straight up. I think you can use Seahawks, but they carry a tiny bit extra risk. The Vegas line for that game is still fairly aggressive in Seattle's favor. So the bookmakers think that they're going to play. And I think that has value for this week, but there is still at least some risk in using Seattle players. Now, to get to the teams with extra motivation for this week, the Chiefs and the Chargers can both still win the AFC West, with the winner getting home field advantage and the loser being the 5 seed. We should expect both teams to be firing on all cylinders, with the Chiefs facing the Raiders and the Chargers on the road in Denver. There is some risk here. If the Chiefs get up big, we could see the Chargers pull people in the second half. So the Chargers are a bit less safe than some of the others on this list, but still overall, they're going to be trying to win from the get-go. The Patriots can finish anywhere from the 1 seed. If the Chiefs lose, if both the Chiefs and Chargers lose, the Patriots can still get the 1 seed, but they could also be the 4 seed. With a win against the Jets, the Patriots will at least lock up a first-round bye and could still get home field throughout the playoffs, so Patriots pushing hard. Texans could get a first-round bye, or they could wind up being a wild card. They're the 3 seed now, and if they lose, they would lose the division to the night game between the Titans and the Colts, which is not on this main slate. The Texans will be going all out this weekend against the Jags because they want that first-round bye if they can get it, or at least a first-round playoff game or home game. The Ravens and Steelers are still trying to make the playoffs. If the Ravens win, they're in. If the Steelers win and get a Ravens loss, they're in. So both those teams will be pushing, with the Ravens facing the Browns and the Steelers facing the Bengals. In the NFC, the Rams need a win to lock up a first-round bye. They are facing the 49ers. Todd Gurley could potentially rest in this one. He did sit out Wednesday's practice. CJ Anderson played 75% of the snaps with Gurley out in week 16, so keep an eye on that one. The Bears, a little bit weirder. They're currently the 3 seed and could still get a first-round bye with a win and a Rams loss. But the Bears can't finish worse than the 3 seed. So if they are scoreboard watching and things are starting to look grim at the half, they could pull some players. On the other side of that game, the Vikings need a win badly. They could make it in with a win and a loss by the Eagles, but likely don't want to count on that. So they'll be all out. Same with the Eagles, who are facing Washington. So overall, we can rely heavily on the Chiefs, Patriots, Texans, Ravens, Steelers, Rams, Vikings, and Eagles to go all out. The Chargers and Bears have motivation, but are risky if they decide to scoreboard watch and prepare for next week. So, Brandon, I want to talk some general strategy here. How willing are you to use players on teams that have nothing on the line for Week 17?
That have nothing on the line, that generally to me comes down more to player specifics, like situation specifics. So it's not really a holistic, you know, I'll still play, you know, certain types of play, like certain positions or anything like that. It really comes down to, I think that this particular team needs to see this particular player in action.
Right.
One of those for me this week is Royce Freeman. I've heard some like game script concerns because he's going to lose passing game work to Devontae Booker, but I mean, I feel like the Broncos have to know what they have in Devontae Booker by now and would benefit from giving Royce Freeman some extended run. So it really comes down more to player-specific situations. If guys are chasing some milestones, that comes into play as well. So it really just comes down to sort of a player-by-player basis for me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and it's kind of the way you have to play it. And I also think the one thing that I value is knowing what the team will do. Like, if we've seen a team that's out of it play a certain way, you know, the past couple of weeks, I don't fully trust they will do the same in week 17, but I am at least more inclined to trust them. Like, the Jets are a great example where they've been out of it forever and they've still been, you know, they've still had Elijah McGuire playing a ton of snaps. They have still had Sam Darnold playing really well with guys like Robbie Anderson and Chris Herndon, you know, contributing in the passing game. So I value that. I value the Packers. Last week, they had nothing on the line, and they had that huge come-from-behind win. I think we can have a bit more trust in them for this week than we would usually. And as Brandon mentioned, there's the motivation. Devontae Adams is within shouting distance of a couple of team records for the Packers. I think it's 134 receiving yards for him to be the all-time single-season franchise leader in receiving yardage. So that helps. I think Jamal Williams, because they have nobody else to evaluate, is helpful there too, because he played 95% of the snaps last week. So it is a case-by-case basis for sure. If you think that a team needs to evaluate a certain player, or like if you think that they know what they have in someone and may not be using that person as a result, then that's going to impact things. So I would say play it that way. Try to do it on a case-by-case basis and analyze based around a couple of different things. Now, the other question I want to ask you here, Brandon, is more from a bankroll management perspective. Because a lot of times in this podcast, we will allude to cash games and what we want to do there. Do you play cash games in week 17? I guess, how does week 17 alter your view on cash games versus tournaments?
I mean, I'm always more of a tournament player than a cash game player. It's just sort of my mindset. But I think that there might be more of a case in a weird way to play more cash games in week 17 if you are smart about your player selection and you don't become oblivious to certain risks that players carry. For example, off the top of my head, I love Chris Carson this week, but you know, there's a chance that the Seahawks do sort of, you know, lighten up in the second half, even before that, if they decide to go that route. And, you know, not playing somebody like Chris Carson in cash games, for example, could go a long way, even though he's underpriced. So if you really just sit down and look and think and you find a cash game lineup where you know that every player in there has motivation, has a good situation, I think that there's some leverage there that you can have. For me, though, I generally think this is more of a tournament week because there are 15 games on the main slate, and that is going to mean that maybe two or three guys are going to emerge with like heavy-ish ownership, but really overall the ownership rates are going to be flatter. That's going to allow you to differentiate far more easily. And with 15 games, you can get weird, and I always like that.
Yes, I think the thought process for me is still play cash because of the reasons you mentioned. And I think that on this specific week 17 slate, there are enough teams that need to win that I can feel pretty good about playing cash games. Like, I have a pool of players I like. It's not as robust as usual. Like, you know, we had a slate a couple weeks ago where there were like six cash game running backs I would consider. There are not six this week.
The top of that running back list is pretty.
It's pretty bloody.
Yeah,
it's not great, Bob. But I think there are enough where I can make a cash game lineup and feel pretty good about it. So there is, you know, there is some thought to still playing cash games, but I will just play less. Like, if I'm going to use the same amount of money as I usually do, I will shovel more of it towards tournaments than usual, and kind of do that. But, you know, as you mentioned, like, it's kind of like the preseason where if you pay attention, you can sometimes know where those riskier investments are, which is good for both cash games and for tournaments.
Yeah, and I was actually just going to say, you know, sort of liken this to preseason, but with less chaos, guesswork. If you put in the research this week, if you really figure out, you know, who's going to play, which isn't impossible like it sometimes feels in the preseason, you still can get a leg up in cash games. So, you know, I'm not talking anybody out of cash games, but there is some risk, for example, like I said, like the Chris Carson situation. You just have to be aware of that if you're going to play heavy cash games this week.
I think Carson is the best example there for sure, especially given the uncertainty around how that team will handle their current positioning. So let's take a look at the injuries for this week, some things that could potentially pop up, those random guys who pop off and do well this weekend. Philip Lindsay is out Sunday after breaking his hand in week 16. That leaves Royce Freeman and Devontae Booker alone in the backfield. Freeman played one more snap than Booker on Monday while trailing, and they could trail again here, though they are at home this time. Brandon, you mentioned Freeman and how the Broncos may want to see what they have with him. Does he interest you at $4,700?
Yeah, a lot, actually. But he's also just another one of those examples. You can't look at this situation and say, oh, Royce Freeman is going to play 80% of the snaps.
Right.
At $4,700, I can lock him in cash games. That's not the case. So you have to be aware of that. But I think Freeman has been underutilized because Philip Lindsay's been so good. He runs a lot against like stacked boxes, but he still has good efficiency numbers when you factor that in. So I think that Freeman is just a very good running back. I think that he has something to show, and I'm going to play Royce Freeman in tournaments. I would not play him in cash games, even at that price, I don't think.
The other thing with Freeman, too, is that, like, he doesn't get work in the passing game in Denver, but he did in college. It's not like he is some, you know, some rock who can't get out of the backfield.
Rock.
So I think it makes sense to, like, you know, like you said, evaluate him. And I could see a path to him playing quite a bit. So I agree, for tournaments, he's not a guy I will go, like, crazy hard on in tournaments. I think most of the cash game running backs are the guys I would focus on most for tournaments as well. But Freeman would be on that list for sure for tournaments. Odell Beckham missed another practice Wednesday, but head coach Pat Shurmur still did not rule him out for week 17. It seems most likely that OBJ sits against what should be some backups for the Cowboys. We've seen two good games for the Giants offense and one atrocious game without OBJ. How are you handling them here, Brandon, with nothing on the line?
I still think that they have some appeal, especially Evan Ingram, just because tight end is just always a train wreck, and his usage has been good, and he's actually good. But I'm interested in Saquon Barkley. I'm actually going to talk about him more later on.
Yeah, I think that Saquon makes sense because it's kind of the discussion we had with the Jets, where, like, they've been out of it for a while now, and they're still using this dude a ton. Like, last week, 21 carries, 7 targets. He had 14 carries, 10 targets the week before that. Like, they're still using him a ton. So we'll talk about him more in the trend section, but I also agree with you on Ingram that he's got, like, 21% of their targets the past three games. They gave him a couple of rush attempts last week, so I think Ingram does make sense as well. Are you chasing Sterling Shepard accidentally getting more than 40 receiving yards?
Yeah, I mean, we're not like huge Sterling Shepard fans on this podcast, but you can't really hate on his opportunity. It's just the production, and he's sort of always a run-after-catch guy, and I don't really care for those types of players.
He's a run-after-catch guy who doesn't usually get the run-after-catch, which is concerning. Shepard's $5,500. I would assume Byron Jones be one of the guys who could sit for the Cowboys this week because he's freaking good. Now, benefit Shepard, he's an option. He's not a great one, I guess is the way I would say it. James Conner is practicing in full for this week, meaning he should be in line to return after missing the past three games. He's coming off a decently long absence, and Jalen Samuels has played well, but the matchup here, Brandon, is ideal, and the Steelers need a win. Are you checking out Conner at $8,000?
Yeah, I would think that they'd go back to him because it's a must win. It's not a, they're already in and they can just sort of ride Jalen Samuels one more week. It's probably going to be a James Conner week. We know what his upside is. We know that they need to win. So I think that I will have him. But again, I'm not playing him in cash games because I can't know for sure what that snap rate is going to look like.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at these two running backs, I think the guy who matches up best with the Bengals is Connor. Like, if you looked 2 weeks ago at the Patriots game, like, that kind of made sense that Jalen Samuels, like, even if Connor were healthy, it would have made sense to get him involved because he can better exploit those linebackers. For the Bengals, like, they're just bad. And I think that Connor can really take advantage of that. So the fact that he got in a full practice Wednesday makes me feel a lot better about him. So I actually will probably wind up having a decent amount of Connor in tournaments. He is not a cash game play, but he is very close to being one. He is a fringe cash game play, I think, is the way that I would phrase it there. So I'm really into him for this week. Spencer Ware got in a full practice Wednesday as well. That puts him on track to return Sunday. Damian Williams played well with Ware out, but Ware was running ahead of Williams before his injury. We'll talk more about the Chiefs during the trends section. The Texans placed Demaryius Thomas on injured reserve due to a ruptured Achilles tendon. Kiki Cutie has missed the past four games due to a hamstring injury, but been practicing on a limited basis forever, it seems like. DeAndre Carter played 75% of the snaps in Week 17. Got 7 targets, but he is very much a slot receiver like Cutie. So we'll talk more about this Texans offense in the trend section as well. The 49ers not going to have Matt Breida and Dante Pettis in Week 17 against the Rams. We've seen Jeffrey Wilson Jr. excel with Breida out before. Now they're on the road as 10-point dogs facing a motivated team. But Brandon, we saw Wilson get work in the passing game. So where do you sit on him at $5,800? And is there anybody else on this team who catches your eye?
Yeah, I like Wilson. Like you said, we've seen it from him before. I would have to think that, you know, his role is relatively safe, which you can't really say for every running back. You know, someone like Royce Freeman, who, you know, is $1,100 cheaper than Wilson, but I like Wilson fine. And without Dante Pettis, I like Kendrick Bourne at 4,900.
Yeah. Bourne is interesting just because they need to throw to somebody. Like, it could just be George Kittle, but it's probably not going to be just George Kittle. Marquise Goodwin is also banged up. We know Pierre Garçon's not healthy, so they're going to have to throw to somebody. Like, maybe it's Richie James week, I don't know. But I think that Bourne is the guy they have turned to most often of those other guys. He's had four targets in four straight games, so if you're looking for someone, yeah.
I like Richie James just as a you know, small school prospect, but yeah. Kendrick Bourne has run at least 88% of the routes in 5 of 6 games. I think that he has the best path. I mean, the Rams are tough on wideouts, but I would have to think the 49ers are forced to throw quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just 4,900, that's very cheap.
Exactly. The Panthers will be starting Kyle Allen this week in place of Taylor Heinicke, who was placed in injured reserve. Good night, sweet prince. It's not an injury, but the Panthers head coach, Ron Rivera, did say the team could hold out Christian McCaffrey this week against the Saints to keep him fresh for next year. I would say it's likely wise to avoid McCaffrey this week as a result. The same line of thinking is in play for the Falcons, who have said that Julio Jones and Tevin Coleman may be limited, or they did miss practice Wednesday. Neither player has a full workload or had a full workload in week 16. So I'd probably avoid them too against the Buccaneers. Not injury related, but the Bucs apparently may want to see what their quarterback Ryan Griffin can do in week 17. That makes Jameis Winston a risky play. So proceed with caution around Winston and other Buccaneers. If they are in evaluation mode, that would be kind of scary. This is the final week of the Number Fire Podcast Network free roll. The winner gets 3 free months of Number Fire Premium, and pretty much everybody who enters will get free FanDuel points to be used on entries. If you want in on the Week 17 free roll, here is your URL. Just go to FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. That's FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire to get in on the Week 17 free roll. Again, FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. And thanks to all of you who have played throughout the season. Let's move now to our trends discussion for week number 17. Again, only 3 trends for this week as we are trying to navigate around all the playoff implications. Brandon, your first trend does talk about one of those teams with something heavily on the line this week, and that is the Chiefs. What do you see with them in week 17 as they host the Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to explore the Chiefs because obviously they have, you know, they control their own destiny, and they're playing at home, which, oddly enough, they're not quite as prolific at home as they are on the road, at least in terms of points scored. But, I mean, most weeks the Chiefs are, like, off the main slate because they're playing in prime time, or they're priced to a point where we, you know, can't really play them because of a lack of value. But with the value opened up with all these, you know, injuries and, you know, teams resting starters, we can afford the Chiefs. And, you know, while Patrick Mahomes is 9,500, Tyreek Hill is only 7,800. Travis Kelce, 7,700, which is pricey for a tight end. But if he were just if he were tagged as a wide receiver, he would be in play at 7,700. You know, we don't know for sure what Spencer Ware is doing, but Damian Williams is 6,900. Ware himself is 66. So I think overall, all of these options are affordable. And you know, based on Number Fire's metrics, the Chiefs have the top adjusted offense on a per-play basis, the best adjusted passing offense in the league. They're 4th best in rushing, regardless really of who's their running back. Oakland is bottom 3 in overall adjusted defense, rushing defense, passing defense. They're just not a good defense. So it is just a great spot for the Chiefs. They're in a position to clinch that one seed with a win over a terrible, terrible defense. Now at home, this is just, you know, kind of silly, but I mean, the Chiefs offense doesn't really seem as potent. They average 0.42 points per play at home versus 0.55 on the road. That is pretty substantial, but if you look at their net expected points per play, it's actually identical at 0.27. This is, you know, like a top tier offense regardless. And that matters. Whenever you try to, like, you can't overlook the road splits, but I mean, they're just elite regardless. And I really don't think that there's anything to worry about for the Chiefs this week. They need a win. They're getting a cake matchup. The offense has been just as elite from an expected point standpoint, even though they haven't actually converted those points at home quite as often. But I'm going to be super flexible this week because I have to be. It's like I said at the top of the show, but you know, they're cheap RBs. I think my only priority this week is to make sure that I load up on the Chiefs, to make sure that I get access to a team that can drop 50 points here in a not a must win, but a game that would be very helpful if they did win. I love Patrick Mahomes at 9,500. He's affordable with the value opened up. I think Travis Kelce against the Raiders, who are like significantly easily just terrible, more terrible than any other team against the tight end. They struggle with a deep ball as well. So I like Tyreek Hill. So it's Mahomes, Kelce, Hill in that order for me. And even with Spencer Ware healthy, I would use Damian Williams in sprinkles. I would even consider Spencer Ware because this team, again, could just put up 45 easily. You know, I'm not going to be alone in stacking up the Chiefs, but with 15 games on the main slate, ownership is almost guaranteed to be dispersed enough not to worry about it too much. So I'm kind of blindly just going all in on the Chiefs. I think maybe every lineup that I have is going to have some exposure to Kansas City. So, Jim, do you think that's dumb? Are you worried about the Chiefs at all, that they might let off the gas pedal? What are your thoughts here?
No, I think given what's on the line here, you really can't let off the gas pedal. And we joke about Andy Reid in like high pressure situations and his clock management and stuff, but like he's a smart dude. He knows what this game means because there are very few home fields that are as valuable as Arrowhead. Like I would say New Orleans, maybe. Like that might be it, honestly. Outside of Arrowhead, like their defense is so much better at home. And if they don't have to leave Kansas City for the entire playoffs, that makes their team so much more lethal. So I think they understand what's on the line here. And I think that will lead to a fairly aggressive game plan. So I think I would rank Kelce above Mahomes. I think, like, I don't pay up a tight end often, but like Kelce, like you said, is a wide receiver who happens to be tight end eligible. And he makes it so you don't have to roster somebody else. Like, I don't have to go to Chris Herndon or to Gerald Everett, who I do like. But, like, I don't have to go to those guys if I use Kelce. So I think I'm going to have most Kelce followed by Mahomes, followed by Hill. And I do think that Hill is very appealing, even though he hasn't had a big blow-up game in a while. He's still getting a lot of targets, getting looks down the field. I know he's banged up, but, like, he's still getting volume. And if Mahomes hits him on that volume, he'll blow up again. So I think I rank him Kelce, Mahomes, Hill, but I agree with you that like you kind of want to have probably one in each lineup, I would guess.
Yeah, that's like I sat back and I looked at the slate and I had a hard time thinking that there's any reason to worry, but also that we should be so in on the Chiefs that every lineup should have someone from this team in it. I mean, you maybe don't have to get that aggressive if you're playing like 150 lineups, but it just seems like the biggest, like the most obvious spot to load up. And they're not even like, it's not even like they're overpriced because of all the value.
Yeah. I think the Chiefs and the Steelers are like the two teams where I probably want to have one in each lineup or somewhere close to it. So,
what about the running backs here? If Spencer Ware plays,
I agree with your assessment about Damian Williams. Right, I'd still use some of him because, like, he looked good, and I think like we could see Spencer Ware get Wally pipped, where he gets hurt, and because the other guy looks so good when he's out, he comes back to a more limited role. Like the fact that he was a full practice this week or on Wednesday makes it a little bit more concerning. But I will at least have some Damian Williams, although not a ton. So kind of, I think the same with you there.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that Oakland's 30th in adjusted rush defense based on number fires metrics. They're 28th in rushing success rate allowed. It's such a cake matchup. And I mean, we generally hate targeting running backs who don't play, like aren't guaranteed 70% of the snaps, mm-hmm. but with an implied team total of almost 34, like there are points enough where Damian Williams can pay off a $6,900 price tag, even if he doesn't blow up.
And Williams was involved in that game where Ware got hurt before he got hurt. He had five targets in that game, 8 rush attempts, so I think that he's still fine. Let's talk about the Patriots here and their offense without Josh Gordon. Tom Brady last week didn't look very good in the first game without Gordon. He had negative 11.83 passing net expected points against the Bills, easily his worst performance of the entire year, and it's probably not a coincidence that it happened after he lost one of the few players who could occasionally accidentally get open on this team. This week, the Patriots facing the Jets. The Jets are ranked 21st against the pass based on number of fires metrics, and they just let up a huge day to the Packers at home. The Jets are now on the road, and the Packers have a lot on the line here. That means we need to at least look at this offense and see how to handle them, even with Brady struggling last week. In that first game without Gordon, Julian Edelman easily led with 10 targets. None of those targets were deep, as Brady went deep just once the entire day. If we look at Edelman returning from his suspension since then, he has 26% of the team's targets. At $7,100, I think he is easily the best way to get access to this offense. I want him in cash games, and he is great for tournaments as well. Everything else was kind of spread out. Nobody else had more than 5 targets, and Rex Burkhead and James White were next in the pecking order for throws. Rob Gronkowski had 3 targets. He had the lone deep target, just didn't catch any of those. So Gronk is super risky, but so are all tight ends. His price is down to $5,800 this week after being up at $6,900 just 2 weeks ago. He went off against Miami. That was less than a month ago. I like Gronk less than Edelman, but he is on the tournament radar for sure. The Patriots in that game deployed a rush-heavy attack, and they spread things out a ton. Sony Michel got 18 carries. That's not a bad number, but Rex Burkhead got 13. James White got 8. Cordero Patterson got 4. So if we were going to go there, Michel would be the one with the most guaranteed work. But even in a game where they ran a ton and had an early lead, Michel trailed both Burkhead and White in snaps, and he topped out at 18 carries. I can't really trust him at $7,200, and both Burkhead and White get less work overall. So I think when I'm looking at this team, I feel great about Edelman and cash, and I love him in tournaments. Gronk is in play for tournaments. Then the rest, I am wary of investing. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Tom Brady. Are you using him this week? Because he is a quarterback with something on the line, but he did just lose a playmaker in his offense. That's a little bit risky. Where do you sit on Brady and the rest of the Patriots week 17?
I might have a little bit of Tom Brady, but he might not make the cut. That's just sort of where I am with him. We were in on him against, who was it, Miami, I guess, and that worked out. But I think I'm more inclined to target Julian Edelman first, mostly in like the cashier formats or smaller tournaments. He doesn't really have that. I mean, he hasn't had 20 points yet this year. It's just not really his game to have, 100-plus receiving yards consistently. I think he's got there twice all year. But, I mean, he's just a high-floor option. The Jets are beatable in the slot for sure. And so I think Edelman is a great sort of cashier or small tournament play. You can still play him in larger tournaments. Where who else? Rob Gronkowski. I mean, imagine like knowing that Rob Gronkowski was going to be $5,800.
Imagine knowing that 2 weeks ago when he was 69.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's always a case to be made just to take a chance or two on Gronk, but Evan Ingram or Rob Gronkowski this week, like that's a legitimate, I would probably side with Ingram far more often than not.
I was going to retort with, oh, well, Tom Brady or Eli Manning, but with the way Brady looked in week 16, I'm not trying to rag on him. I'm just
saying. Yeah. So like, okay. So here's where I am. Brady, probably not. Edelman for sure. I love him. Gronk, if I have to, like if I'm just sort of in that price range, I don't mind him. Mm-hmm. I kind of don't hate Sony Michel, even though the snap rate's been so low. It's just when he's on the field, he gets a carry. That's basically, he just comes on the field, gets a carry as 13.5 point favorites. That's going to give him a solid workload, but I mean, I'm not in love with him by any means. So yeah. I could sort of take or leave Sony Michel this week.
I think the one reason I may be a tiny bit higher on Brady is I can see a scenario in which the Jets keep pace in this game.
It's very true, yeah.
Given the way they played the past 3 weeks with Darnold playing better. So I'm probably not going to be stacking a lot of games this week. I could see myself stacking this one, though. So
yeah.
I think that's an argument in favor of Brady. So I'll have some Brady for sure. He is not my favorite guy pushing, but like he'll be on the list, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Baltimore-Cleveland game. Like Cleveland and the Jets are both, playing pretty solid football, so they could keep that game.
Like these are their playoffs. So that's what Baker said. Yeah. So like, I'd run through a wall for Baker. I hope his teammates do his name. So that's right. Literally run through a wall for you, Baker, just to say the word. Let's move on to your second trend here, Brandon. Talk about the Texans because they're facing the Jaguars, and they have a lot on the line here as well because a wide range of outcomes for them. Depending on what happens in week 17. So you're going to look at Deshaun Watson and his recent passing efficiency splits to see what we should do with him here against the Jaguars.
Yeah, Watson's 8,200, and he's very interesting to me. The Texans are interesting to me as well just because of their playoff implications. You know, they can actually clinch a first-round bye or a first-round home game with a win. They could get the two seed if the Patriots lose to the Jets, which, you know, as you just mentioned, it's probably not going to happen, but that game could be closer than the Patriots would like. But really, I mean, it could be the difference between a first-round home game or a game as the sixth seed, you know, as a wild card on the road. So, they have reason to win. And so I wanted to look at something Houston-based, and I wanted to look specifically at Watson because it's sort of the Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins show. And it's also sort of hard to pick a split for stats because we can always talk ourselves into, like, cutting off good or bad games depending on what our deep-seated biases are. But I'm just going to go back to week 11 here for Watson, the first game after the bye. So it excludes his 5-touchdown game, and it also includes his third worst performance of the season as a passer, according to passing net expected points. But since week 11, Watson has averaged 8.34 yards per attempt, league average about 7.4, 7.5, somewhere in there. He's got 9 touchdowns and 2 picks. In that split. Now, that's just 0.16 passing net expected points per drop back, just above the league average of 0.12. His success rate's right in line with league average at 50.7%, but a big reason why that he's good with yards per attempt but not the advanced metrics are because he took 26 sacks in that split. On the season, the Jags are 23rd in sack rate. They're 23rd in sack net expected points per drop back generated. They are 11th in quarterback hit rate, so that's a bit of a concern. But since week 9, the Jags are 31st in sack rate and sack net expected points per drop back. So I think that this could be an efficient passing game for Watson, whose real issue of late has sort of just been staying upright. At 8,200, he's not cheap, but even after that big rushing game last week, he's almost certainly not going to be prohibitively popular, especially when people still see that matchup with the Jaguars. No quarterback's ever really overly popular in this slate as 15 games, so I'm not worried about that. The bigger issue, perhaps, is just the health of DeAndre Hopkins, who was a game-time decision last week. He was limited at Wednesday's practice, but not out, which is promising. Now, we sort of glossed over Julio Jones and whether he'll play, but Hopkins is just 114 yards behind Julio for the league lead in yardage, and if Julio were to sit or be limited, I mean, it's at least worth noting. Since the bye, Hopkins has a 32.6% target share, which is 9.5 targets per game, just about 50% of the air yards, 113.7 air yards per game, which is just a fantastic number. And then we also have the cheaper option in DeAndre Carter at 5,200. He ran 80% of the routes last week, played 75% of the snaps, got 7 targets. He's going to play primarily from the slot, which is sort of generally the best way to beat the Jaguars. So I think overall I'm pretty in on this offense, despite that matchup with the Jaguars, despite DeAndre Hopkins' health. So Jim, where are you landing on Houston? And do you think that you'll actually go with lineups with Watson at 8,200?
Yeah, definitely. I think what you mentioned there was kind of the alluring thing to me is that like people might avoid it because of the matchup, but you don't need to. Like the Jaguars aren't the Jaguars. Like the big force of the Jaguars is their defensive line. And like you said, like they're not getting sacks right now. Like they're not trying. And they've also been, even when they were good, they were a much different defense than the road. They allowed 40 to the pre-Amari Cooper Dallas Cowboys, and that was a bad offense. And now they're going on the road to face a team that needs a win. They're playing indoors. And I kind of think that Watson makes a ton of sense. I agree with you on DeAndre Carter, as long as Kiki Cutie doesn't play, because they're both slot guys, like very slot guys. Like they need to be in the slot. So I think if Cutie plays, I'll go him. If not, I'll go Carter. And I think both those guys do make a lot of sense for this week. I worry a bit about Watson maybe having a drop-off now that he's lost both Will Fuller and Demaryius Thomas, but Demaryius Thomas wasn't good, and he didn't have Will Fuller in the entire split you were talking about. So, like, I shouldn't worry too much. I shouldn't overthink it. So I think that, yeah, I'm in here for sure. How much DeAndre Hopkins will you have knowing he's facing Jalen Ramsey?
I mean, I don't really know what my exposures are going to look like. If I'm spending down often at running back, which I think is sort of by necessity.
Let me ask you this. Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, or Devontae Adams, knowing that Adams has that the record narrative in his favor?
I'd probably rank Hopkins third, honestly.
I think I would as well, but still high enough on him to get exposure, correct?
Yeah, so... I'm probably going to build lineups where I spend down often at running back, and then I just sort of cycle in these high upside but volatile wide receivers. So I'm not going to live on Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins stacks. It's sort of burned me too many times, but his workload is still great. It's just that he's not 100%. He still has a tough individual matchup, but he overcomes that with his workload. So again, he's not my favorite high-priced wide receiver, but I think that there's a path to a big game for Hopkins here.
You can still justify using him despite the fact that he has a really tough matchup, and I agree with that for sure. Let's move on to my second trend here. Talk about a receiver who is a tiny bit cheaper in Keenan Allen, because the Chargers are in a spot here where they could get home field advantage still. That means that we need to look at them, and I think everyone's in play here. I love Melvin Gordon, but I love Keenan Allen almost just as much. And I love Melvin Gordon, so that's saying a lot. Allen had frustrating target shares earlier in the year, but then he complained a bit about the number of targets he was seeing, and it's really changed everything for him. That complaint from Allen came right before their bye week. And so if we set the date here, since the Chargers bye, there have been 7 games that Allen has finished. In those 7 games, he has 32.7% of the team's overall targets. He has at least 7 targets in each game. He has hit double-digit targets 3 times in that span. And a lot of these are high-leverage looks. He has 38% of the targets, at least 16 yards downfield. He has 36% of the red zone targets. And that doesn't always lead to huge yardage totals. Like, he is one of those guys who requires a good amount of volume to get there, but he has still topped 120 receiving yards twice in that time, and he had at least 70 in all but 2. With no Chris Harris here, you can very much beat this Denver team pretty much anywhere, and Allen seems like someone who could take advantage. He racked up 89 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets in their first meeting, and that was with Harris active. Allen's salary is also low. It's weird. It's $7,600. I don't often build around wide receivers, but I may come close to it this week with his salary being that low and the Chargers needing a win here. So, Brandon, I want to talk about Keenan Allen. He's in kind of an awkward pricing zone where he is right by Juju Smith-Schuster, Tyreek Hill, Robert Woods, Julian Edelman's a little bit cheaper as well. There are a lot of good choices around him. But where do you sit on Keenan Allen at $7,600?
Yeah, I like him. He gets that volume, and he doesn't get a lot of, you know, deep looks necessarily, but in his past 3 games that he's actually completed, he does have 8 deep targets. So targets at least 16 yards downfield. So his deep usage has been better of late. His volume since the bye is something I've been tracking often. But yeah, I really don't ever play him because I spend up at running back and I can't really get him in. Mm-hmm. But his price is low and I'm not planning on, frankly, I sort of can't pay up at running back.
Yeah, good luck if you want to.
So I'm going to have the money and sort of looking for a blend of floor and upside among those options. Allen does stand out. You know, he's not my favorite necessarily wide receiver in that $7,000 range, but I am going to need to you know, write it on a post-it note to play Keenan Allen because he does have some high upside with his touchdown ability.
Yeah, I think that this range is really good for tournaments, but I think for cash games, Allen is kind of the guy who stands out. Like, I like him more than Tyreek Hill for sure in cash games.
And it's just Edelman being there at 71.
Yeah.
But those two are the standouts for me in cash games.
Like, I could honestly get both those guys, I think, in my cash game lineup this week, given the fact that I don't need to spend $9,700 or $96 on Todd Gurley because, like, he's not at full health. So I think I'm probably going to wind up in that range for two slots. And, like, if I do, I think they're the guys who stand out. And I think the Allen's upside is high enough where I can go there in tournaments too. So Melvin Gordon,
I'm assuming you for you. Melvin.
I agree. What were you going to ask?
So how far is the gap for you between Keenan Allen and Robert Woods at the same price?
Because
I'm not acting like Robert Woods doesn't have a high floor and high ceiling as well.
Right. No, he does. You're right. I think the reason that I lean towards Allen is because his post-buy market shares are so stupid. And, like, Robert Woods is, I think he's at 26% of the targets since Cooper Kupp got hurt, which is a very good number. He's had, like, 60 yards basically every week that he's existed on this planet. But, like, Allen has that same floor, but I believe his target projection is higher. And when I have a similar floor, I'll take the higher target projection because that can also lead to a good ceiling. So yeah, I lean Allen, but the gap, like, I'm going to use Woods too. I guess that's the way I'd say it.
Yeah, it's really hard this week. And it felt like it wasn't the case maybe last week I hit a receiver, maybe the week before. I don't even remember. Last week was
terrible for receiver.
But this week, I mean, you go top down pretty much every healthy receiver for me, like above, you know, 6,500.
Yeah.
Ish, maybe 67, it has a case to be playable this week. So it's hard to differentiate, or it's hard to narrow things down. But I do prefer Allen to Woods, but that's a pretty nice range for receivers this week.
Absolutely agree. And I'll be in that range a lot more often than usual for this week. Let's move to your third trend, Brandon. Our third trend's both focusing on running backs because it's kind of a tough landscape for running back this week because a lot of the games where there's meaning, you know, there's something on the line here. Like, we got Kenneth Dixon and Gus Edwards. Fun. I love it. I love it. It's cool. We got James Conner coming off of injury. Like, there are just a lot of bad situations for running backs in those meaningful games. Damian Williams and Spencer Ware. It's tough.
Howard.
Yeah, no. No, don't say that. How? Why would you bring him up? What is wrong with you?
You're not playing Jordan Howard in a very important game.
I'd rather die. Your third trend is focusing on someone in that high pricing range at running back who may still be viable despite the fact that his team has nothing on the line. So talk me through Saquon Barkley here.
Yeah. So the top flight running backs, it's generally on this podcast, that's where we start building our lineups. We play three, we force them in for the most part. It's hard to do this week. It's at the top, Todd Gurley at 96. He sat out last week, sat out Wednesday's practice. I mean, they have reason to win, but, you know, we don't know for sure yet if Todd Gurley's playing. We don't know if he's going to play a full game, so there's a question mark there. You mentioned that Ron Rivera said that they're, you know, they might need to evaluate their younger players and not play Christian McCaffrey this week. We're getting the run around with the Cowboys, who can't improve their position at all with a win. So that hurts Ezekiel Elliott at 8,800, but I haven't really heard anything about limiting Saquon Barkley, who was 8,500 this week, which is pretty cheap, all things considered, for someone of Barkley's caliber. He's playing at home against the Cowboys, who again have nothing to gain if they go out and go nuts. And Barkley's just 114 yards from getting to 2,000 scrimmage yards on the season, something that the Giants, you know, probably want to get him to help justify their selection of him. You know, it's whatever. That's not what we're here to talk about. But getting him to 2,000.
That can be their rebuttal when Sam Darnold drops four tutties on the Patriots and knocks him down to the four seed.
Yeah, I think that I think that he'd be the third rookie running back ever to get to 2,000 scrimmage yards. So it's like a, it makes sense that he gets some work, but you know, more importantly to me, the usage of late doesn't really suggest that he's getting slowly rested. Since he played 48.4% of the snaps in a blowout win over Washington, came out the next week, played 100%, and then he played 88% last week. He had 5 red zone opportunities last week when he saw 21 carries and 7 targets overall, which is just an elite workload. You know, the Giants offense overall hasn't, you know, thrived necessarily since that blowout win, but that, you know, including the blowout win and 27 points in Indianapolis, it's not like things are just, you know, awful. It's not like it's an Arizona Cardinals situation. So, you know, you got to like that. And for better or for worse, Eli Manning is starting this game. So that to me at least implies that the team's not going to be just throwing out wrenches from the get-go. It might not be 4 quarters of Saquon Barkley, but I think that it could be, and that makes him very interesting at his price. He actually already has more games with at least 15 FanDuel points than any other running back this year, which he's done 13 times. Just feels like a spot where his floor is really high while they try to get him to that 2,000 scrimmage yard mark. They can go out on a high note at home in week 17 against the division rival. I'm not locking Barkley into every lineup like I sort of would be on a normal week where there was more safety here, but I do foresee being overweight while others sort of focus more on the cheaper backs because Barkley just has that floor and upside potential here. So, Jim, where are you with Saquon Barkley this week?
I think – so the Eli Manning thing you mentioned is impactful because, like, if they're going to use him, it means that they're kind of trying, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't apply to that given the way Eli has played. But if Odell Beckham, who is not practicing again on Thursday, if he were to somehow play, that to me would signal, cool, they want to win, and then I'd be higher on Barkley. But it seems like he's probably going to sit again, so I would have some Barkley. For the reasons you mentioned also on top of that, like with Baker playing as well as he is, like maybe they'll view Rookie of the Year as being another motivation for Saquon.
Yeah.
So like I would have some, but like I don't know. Like he's kind of one of those guys where like a lot of times when I'm done filling out all my game stacks, I will go through and say, okay, I want to have exposure to this person in each of my game stacks. So I'll go through and I will fill out Saquon Barkley in a stack with this game, Saquon Barkley in a stack with that game, and on and on and on. He's kind of in that range for me where if he goes off, I can still benefit, but I'm not overly exposed. I think that's where he sits for me this week. So potentially a little bit lower than you, but still in on him, even with that being said.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, he's a good example of cash game. You know, if you're playing cash games this week, you can't necessarily assume that Saquon Barkley is right, going to play 100% of the snaps or 88% of the snaps, but it's very logical that he does and gets a lot of touches to get to that, you know, 2,000 yard plateau to make a stronger case for offensive rookie of the year, whatever. I don't even care what the words are.
Nor should you. Yeah.
The Giants would probably like a big game from Saquon Barkley here. So that makes him at least not off the list in cash games by any means, but also makes him very intriguing to me in tournaments while everybody else is trying to, you know, for the most part, spend down at running back.
James Conner or Saquon Barkley?
Barkley.
All right, I'll go Conner there. Let's move on to my third trend, talking about another back who has nothing on the line here. We saw what they would do with him last week with nothing on the line, and that was Jamal Williams with the Packers, and they used him heavily. He's getting workhorse-type usage, and he's not priced like one, at $6,800. So because Aaron Jones got hurt so early in Week 15, we do actually have kind of 2 full games on Williams as the lone ranger in this backfield, and he doesn't leave the field. His snap rate was 87% in Week 15. It was 95% in Week 16. His Week 16 snap rate was the highest of any back in the league, including Saquon Barkley and Zeke Elliott. Like, he was just on the field the whole time. The Packers didn't run a ton in either game, but it didn't matter because Williams got 12 carries and 15 carries, which is enough when you add on his work in the passing game. Target totals there were 5 and 9 respectively. That gives him 15% of the team's targets in those 2 games. So what we have is a lower salary running back who is at home, favored, playing a ton of snaps, and getting work as both a rusher and a receiver. That checks pretty much every box for me imaginable. But the Packers had nothing to play for. That was also true last week, but it's still not overly comforting. So, Brandon, I want to talk to you about Jamal Williams here. How are you handling him this week? And is he someone you would consider in cash games, or does the lack of motivation concern you?
Yeah, so this is just another, I keep sort of harping on it, but like, you can't play Jamal Williams in cash games and then be disappointed if he doesn't play his usual workload or what his usual workload has been the past 2 weeks. You can't do it. You have to be open to it, but it's a very sort of enticing spot just from a workload standpoint relative to his price and relative to just sort of the other backs, even though there are a lot of, you know, cheaper running backs with a path to touches.
Right.
We've been seeing it from Williams for two straight weeks. And I think for that reason, he might be, I don't know. I think that he's going to be, he's such like an awkward price, I guess, is the biggest problem for me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I understand why you would be concerned. I think it's justified to be concerned about him. But I think last week to me showed that the Packers want to go out on a high note. Maybe they're trying to recruit Lincoln Riley to come up to Green Bay. But I think that to me is impactful. And he's on my list for cash games. I don't know if he's going to wind up being in my cash game lineup, but like, I will look long and hard. If I cannot afford to spend up for, you know, Melvin Gordon, which I'm going to try to do, obviously, I could settle for Williams for sure. So he's on my list.
Where does he rank for you among the backs who are below 7,000? I know that's like a wide, like a big net, but.
So if Todd Gurley sits, C.J. Anderson's probably one, right?
I guess.
I don't know. That's weird to say. He's been cut like three times this year, but let's go. Week 17.
Elijah McGuire, Chris Carson.
I would say that it's Dalvin Cook. The three guys who I would consider ranking first in that range are Williams, Dalvin Cook, and C.J. Anderson. If
no
Todd Gurley sits. Like, if I know in advance Todd Gurley will sit. I think those are the three I would consider in that to be the number one there. What about for you?
Yeah, I think I still might like Carson. Maybe I'm just feeling bad because he burned me in a season long championship. But I mean, it makes sense that he gets a lot of work in this game. I think he's underpriced relative to his workload, and Arizona is one of those, like, I guess, reverse funnel defenses where you can run on them but not pass on them quite as easily. So
I guess I'm a little bit lower on Carson just because Rashad Penny is coming back, and like, it doesn't take away a ton of work, but it takes away some. And that just kind of, I don't like to use him when Penny's active. He's done well with Penny active, but it just makes me a little bit less excited about him.
So what I'm hearing overall is we're going to spend down at running back, but we're not exactly confident in necessarily every single one of these guys.
Right. So I think you just have to like look hard at the situation and say, what blemishes am I willing to accept? Am I willing to accept a bad matchup? That's Dalvin Cook. And I am. I will take that bad matchup for sure. Am I willing to accept a lack of motivation? That means you're accepting Jamal Williams or someone like that. Am I willing to accept the fact that this guy's been cut three times this year? That's C.J. Anderson. So it's like,
and who says
on what you can tolerate most.
Yeah, and he says on Twitter that he's slow and like, not in great shape,
which is hilarious.
It's funny, yeah,
but it's also really concerning. But hey, running backs are the most important position on the field, so let's ride. Before we take a look at the weather for this week,
I'm sorry, I didn't want to leave you hanging, but I didn't want to start anything. If C.J. Anderson can run for, was it like 137 yards or something?
I had a political argument in my mentions like a couple days ago, so I can deal with anything. Like, bring your trash takes to my mentions because I am used to it. It was Christmas. People were getting angry about things. I didn't even do anything to provoke this. It just happened. So bring it on, guys. Let's go. FanDuel just added a brand new, never-before-seen slate to their NFL offerings. Second half only. That is right. It's half the game, but all of the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot at halftime? Maybe you know you've got a big win in the bag and you want to double down in your lineup. Well, now you can draft a brand new team for just the second half of an NFL single game. To find one of the available half slates, just select the single game NFL game style and look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel. Let's take a look at the weather for week 17. Normally, we'd be concerned about, you know, snow, high winds. Not a lot for this week as of Thursday morning. We could have some wind up in Green Bay for the Packers and the Lions. The wind speed's currently projected at 16 miles per hour, which would be enough to downgrade passing games for the Packers and the Lions, but I'd monitor that one heading into Sunday because it could always go down before then. Wind speeds in Kansas City as the Chiefs host the Raiders are currently at 10 miles per hour. That game's just a check back on later because it is fine as it stands right now. Let's move now to our positional plays for week number 17. Brandon, let's talk about quarterback first. Who are you looking at there?
Jared Goff.
All right. He's back.
7,800. I mean, I love Mahomes. I love Ben Roethlisberger as well. But Goff, I like the price here. The Rams need a win. So that's a key piece for me this week for quarterback selection because my quarterbacks, I mean, I can take some shots on running backs and receivers. But for quarterbacks, I need that motivation because quarterbacks need a full game to be worth their prices unless they just explode because, you know, one big play is not enough for quarterbacks. They need that some of that volume. Goff bounced back last week, had a pretty efficient day. He was 19 of 24, 216 yards and a touchdown, 0.25 passing net expected points per drop back. His success rate was above 61%. Still overall, not great metrics since the bye, but pretty much a league average success rate, which helps me buy in against the league's 27th ranked adjusted pass defense. I kind of like Josh Allen as well this week at 7,700. He's my second love here. I guess I should have said that I kind of love Josh Allen, but you know he's at home against a divisional opponent. That divisional opponent, Miami, ranks 29th in adjusted pass and rush defense. Miami also 25th in yards per carry allowed to quarterbacks. Allen ran for 135 yards against them in their previous matchup. Now, no, Isaiah McKenzie hurts him, but also helps us stack either Robert Foster or Zay Jones with him. Miami's top five in adjusted yards per attempt allowed on deep throws, but Allen actually had 17 deep attempts against Miami in that past matchup. He throws deep more often than any other quarterback. All it takes is sort of one to give him, you know, a nice connection on a stack, and he's still running the ball enough for me to like him at 7,700 in such a good matchup.
I don't know how to deal with this because you said good things about Goff and good things about Allen. It's you're playing both sides of me here. No,
I mean, would you not play Allen this week?
I have as many 250 yard passing games as Josh Allen does. So if the Dolphins are smart and they decide to shut him down as a rusher, he could flop completely. But I don't have faith in the Dolphins doing that. So you're probably right, but whatever.
If the opponent limits his production, he might not have a good game.
Right.
But that opponent, I meant rushing. Garbage.
I probably didn't say that, though. I meant rushing production.
No. I just meant like...
If they're good, he will do bad. Great analysis, Jim. My first love is Ben Roethlisberger because the Steelers need to win. And they're not going to take their foot off the gas in this game. And Ben is just lethal at home, even this year. He's had 35 or more FanDuel points twice there. He did it in one of those games on just 25 attempts. Like, even if they get a huge lead, dude could still go off. Look at this Bengals defense since their bye week. They've allowed 14 passing touchdowns, which is one pick. So Big Ben, I think my favorite tournament quarterback. My favorite cash game quarterback, though, probably Lamar Jackson because the Ravens need a win. They're at home. They're facing the Browns. His salary is pretty low at $7,700, and the matchup here is pretty good. Denzel Ward, I would assume, will sit out this game after another concussion. The Browns allowed 55 rushing yards and a score to Jameis Winston. Winston, he's run more a bit this year, but he's not really a runner in general. Lamar Jackson has at least 20 pass attempts in 5 straight games now. He's had at least 11 rushing attempts in every start, so he's scored at least 16 FanDuel points in each game. I still think we have not seen his full ceiling yet, so I will use him in tournaments, but I think for cash games, he will be my go-to guy there. Let's slide on down to running back, Brandon. Who are you checking out at that position?
I'm going to stick with Saquon Barkley at the top. I know I talked about him already, but it sounds like I'm going to be overweight on him relative. It sounds like I like him more than you do. I would prefer him to James Conner. So I just want to reiterate that I like him, and he's not going to be as heavily owned for me as he would be if this were a week 15 slate where I wasn't quite as worried. But I mean, 114 yards away from that 2,000 yard mark. Make him the third rookie running back ever to get there. He's playing the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott's going to be on the sideline there, or if he plays, who knows if he plays. But Ezekiel Elliott had 1994 in his rookie year, so it'd probably be fun for the Giants to win the Super Bowl by getting Saquon Barkley 2,000 yards. There's a lot of options to spend down for, so I don't think Barkley's going to be low owned, but he's got that legit upside. Compared to the other running backs this week, because so many of the studs who usually carry heavy upside are sort of riddled with red flags. So I like Barkley. I'm going to play a lot of them. And I just want to make that much known. I also love Chris Carson at 6,400. He's not a safe cash game play, but I think he's just underpriced. Even with that, with the potential scoreboard watching concerns, that takes him sort of out of cash game consideration with Rashad Penny, one of my boys, healthy. That also hurts, but Carson can sort of get it done. He can pay off his price tag without playing a full game. Arizona's 11th in adjusted pass defense, but 28th in adjusted rush defense, and 26th in success rate allowed to running backs on the ground. His snaps are around just 50%. He's averaged 53.8% in terms of snap rate over his past 5. Hasn't hit 60% in that split. I don't think he's actually been there all year, but heavy favorite. Generally plays only half the snaps anyway to get his production. So I'm not as concerned about Carson as I would be otherwise because of that price. Also don't hate Elijah McGuire and Jeff Wilson in this range. But I also love Royce Freeman at 4,700 for my tournaments. He's not the smartest or safest game script play because the Broncos are underdogs against a team that would benefit from a win. But he's only 4,700. He's had 113 carries in the year. It's a third-round pick. It makes sense to get him some extended action with Philip Lindsay out. They just have to know who Devontae Booker is by now, you have to think. The Chargers are 23rd. In rushing success rate allowed to back. So I will have some Freeman shares in tournaments. I'm not going to play him in cash games. Not going to get too heavy, but I do like Royce Freeman quite a bit.
All right, my first love is Melvin Gordon. Last week, his first game back from that knee injury, and he did play 66% of the snaps. That's not a huge number, but it was his first game back. And now an additional week of rest as they played Saturday. He still got 3 targets in that game despite losing third down snaps to Justin Jackson. So they get him work on early downs, which is huge for a running back. Melvin is one of the few true workhorses on this slate. The Chargers need a win. He had 87 receiving yards against the Broncos in week 11. So I think that Melvin is someone who is probably my favorite high-priced running back. There is that risk that if Kansas City gets up top early, the Chargers could shut him down to rest him for next week. But I'm willing to accept that risk and use a lot of Melvin Gordon. My second love is Dalvin Cook. It's a really tough matchup here for the Vikings, but they desperately need to win to get into the playoffs. In 2 games, Cook has played with Kevin Stefanski as his OC. He's averaged 17.5 carries and 2.5 targets per game. And the Vikings are 5-point favorites at home. It's actually now 4.5 as that line has been moving. And I don't think it should necessarily, because I think that the Vikings, probably the more motivated team in this matchup. The Bears are a tough defense, but they are not as tough on the road. They allowed 125 yards to Saquon Barkley, 125 rushing yards to Saquon Barkley, 88 to LeGarrette Blount, 101 to Frank Gore. Dalvin Cook's better than those guys. So I think that Cook is a really good play at 67. I think he is in play for cash, and I will likely use him there because I like what he offers. I was going to talk about Jamal Williams as my third love, but already discussed in the trends. So let's talk about Elijah McGuire here very quickly, because again, the Jets had nothing to play for a while now. With Isaiah Crowell out, McGuire's gotten good work. He has 17, 18, and 14 carries, 4, 4, and 5 targets, and he is the rushing efficiency has not been there. But the Patriots are a team you can run the football on. I think the Jets keep this game closer than the spread would imply, given how poorly they played last week, given how good the Jets have looked since Sam Darnold came back. So I do like Elijah McGuire, $6,300. Not a cash game play. I'd prefer Williams there, but McGuire definitely in play for tournaments for me. Let's move down to wide receiver. Brandon, better this week there than usual. So who you liking there?
Juju.
Like it. Good Juju.
Yeah, 7,900. I mean, I like Tyreek Hill in this range as well, but the Steelers have to win or they're out. They're at home against the Bengals team that not very good down the stretch. They're 26th in adjusted pass defense overall. There's really not a whole lot that's daunting when you look at Cincinnati's defense. They're 25th in adjusted yards per attempt allowed on deep throws. They're below average in fantasy points per target. Two receivers and, you know, to the slot where Juju still plays some every now and again. He's actually 150 yards from Julio Jones for the league leader in yardage. So if Jones were to sit, that would be just a crazy story. There's big motivation here for the Steelers, obviously, for Juju, especially this week. It's not even just a narrative play, but the narrative helps in such a good spot for Juju at a good price. I love Mike Evans as well at 7,300. I kind of want to go big here. I was going to talk about Julian Edelman, but I want some ceiling this week too. This slate could just be straight up pandemonium with all of the value at running back available. Evans is just 121 yards away from Julio Jones. Again, if Jones plays, this is all sort of irrelevant, but you know, with that uncertain quarterback situation, that hurts him a bit, but he's averaged 157 air yards per game, 99 receiving yards per game over his past three. He's averaged 133 air yards on the full season. Atlanta's 23rd against the pass and in target success rate allowed to receivers. So, you know, Mike Evans could blow up in a bad way. He could blow up in a good way. It's tournaments only. You know, if you want some safety, go with Edelman or someone else here. Also, don't, you know, I should just mention, like Brandon Cooks against the team that cannot defend the deep ball. My third love is Kendrick Bourne at 4,900, going the whole way down here. At least 88% of the routes in five of his past six games. Dante Pettis vacates 6.2 targets per game, around 20% of the targets in a game where the 49ers will almost certainly have to throw. It's a tough individual sort of matchup with the Rams corners, but I think that's fine overall with his price and the potential opportunity. Had three deep targets last week. The Rams are 29th against the deep ball for just 4,900. I'm fine with Kendrick Bourne.
Yeah, I got to throw somewhere, and it could be Kendrick Bourne. My first love, actually my first two loves are both in the Green Bay game, so keep an eye on the weather there, because if the winds stay at 16 miles per hour, I would be lower on these two guys. But as of right now, I do like Devontae Adams and Kenny Galladay. Starting with Adams, he needs 134 receiving yards to break the Packers' single-season receiving yardage record, and Aaron Rodgers probably knows that. Adams had 18 targets last week, so Rodgers knows. People will realize this, but I'm hoping that the looming shadow coverage of Darius Slay will keep people away from Devontae Adams, whereas it shouldn't, because he faced Slay earlier this year, and Adams had 12 targets, 9 receptions, 140 yards, and 1 touchdown. This dude is just matchup-proof, so Devontae Adams, still a really good play. Just keep an eye on the win. Same thing there for Kenny Galladay. The Lions have basically quit, but they're still giving Galladay crazy volume. Since Marvin Jones' injury, Galladay has 29% of the team's total targets, and he has at least 8 in every game except for one. He also has 66% of the deep targets. He has $6,800, and he has a monster workload against an easier matchup than what he has had recently. So Kenny Galladay, $6,800. If the wind comes down a bit, he makes for a good mini game stack with either Adams or Jamal Williams. My third love is conditional. It's either Kiki Cutie or DeAndre Carter based on who plays. I just want to use the Texans slot guy. Not really sure who that will be yet. There's no Demaryius Thomas, and DeAndre Carter had 7 targets last week with him out. Cutie had 9 targets in his most recent full game. He had 15 in a game earlier in this season. So the Jags are beatable in the slot, more so than they are outside. So if Cutie plays, I'll take him. He is $5,600. If not, I'll take DeAndre Carter. He is $5,200. Both those guys on my list for this week. Let's move down to tight end, Brandon. Who are you looking at there?
I have George Kittle at $6,700. I know it's expensive, and I mentioned 2 pricier wide receivers, but there is value at running back, and that's kind of the driving factor this week. Kittle's 46 yards shy of Kelsey, Travis Kelsey, that is, obviously, for the league lead in receiving yards by tight ends, despite 460 fewer air yards, which is just crazy to think about. The Rams are generally tough on tight ends. They're 10th in target success rate allowed there, but he did have 5 catches on 8 targets for 98 yards and a touchdown against them in their prior matchup back in week 7. You know, spending down at running back, I can spend up at tight end to try to avoid a dud. And Kittle has 32% of the targets over the past 6 games. I also love Cameron Brate at 4,900. I know he's the second buck I recommended, but I think he's too cheap. He ran the 10th highest route rate of any tight end last week. Just 4,900. Atlanta, mid-level against tight ends and target success rate. There's a huge over-under here. And, I mean, you can do worse if you're trying to save at tight end than Brate. But, you know, just know that he has 24 total air yards the past 2 games. So he's really only a last resort, but he does run routes. And that is at least something if you're not going to spend up for someone like Evan Engram or George Kittle or your first love.
Yeah, and Brate's price is down, so I think that makes sense. My first love is Travis Kelce because he's good at football. He has at least 9 targets in 5 straight games. We look at him since Sammy Watkins initially got hurt. Kelce has 27% of the Chiefs' overall targets, 26% of their deep targets, and 28% of the red zone targets. Dude's just a monster. He has averaged 10 targets and 98 receiving yards per game in games where the Chiefs are favored by 10 or more. So, yeah, it's a heavy spread in their favor, and that could lead to decreased passing game volume, but Kelce has still gone off in those games. So I'm still on him. I love him, and we'll have a lot of him this weekend. My second love is on the other end of the pricing spectrum. That's Gerald Everett, because last week in week 16, his snap rate hit a season high at 75%. The Rams have done this thing all year where they've run with 3 receivers and 1 tight end on every play. They stopped that in week 16. They had both Everett and Tyler Higbee on the field a pretty good amount, so Everett's snap rate went up. His snap rate has been 44% or higher in now 3 straight games, and he's had at least 6 targets in each of those. He has 17.4% of the team's total targets with 1 red zone target in each of those games. So Gerald Everett, if you want to spend down a tight end, and I do, is $4,800. I think he's really fun for this week. So Kelce on the high end, Everett on the low end, and everything is death in between. Let's finish up, Brandon, with defense. Who are you looking at there for week 17?
For defenses, I want someone like a team with some motivation. Defenses can be very terrible if they're not trying, which sounds obvious, but I want to keep that in mind. So, you know, I don't hate Buffalo at 3,700, but I'm going to try to pay up for the Chiefs at 44. They're still pretty affordable. They control their own destiny. They're at home in a tough stadium. The Raiders are 26th in points per play, 25th in net expected points per play when on the road. Huge underdogs, but they still have a 20.25-point implied total. So the total scares me a tad, I won't lie, but that also implies some play volume, which means sack and turnover attempts for a defense that can clinch the 1 seed at home. So I like the Chiefs at 44. They're probably going to be my most stoned defense.
And the Chiefs' pass rush is dirty at home, so I like that as well. My love is the Vikings. Trubisky has been good this year, but he has been much better at home than he has been on the road. And he goes on the road here to play in Minnesota in a game where they need to win, and those fans will probably be a little liquored up by the time we get to 3:25 Central Time. So that'll help the Vikings defense. They have, okay, this is weird. Like, this is kind of cherry picky, but I don't care. They have 9 or more sacks in 2 of the past 3 home games, which is just stupid. They've just been on the road a whole bunch. They're $4,100. They're 4.5-point home favorites, playing with huge motivation. I like the Vikings. If you want to spend down for cash games, I like the Giants facing what should be the Cowboys backup. So I think if you're trying to spend down in cash games, which I do want to do this week, the Giants make a lot of sense for me at $3,300. Brandon, this is a slate where, yes, we're recording this on Thursday and giving out our suggestions, but you got to pay attention all the way through Sunday morning. For me personally, I'm probably not setting lineups until Sunday morning if I can avoid it, just because I want that news to come out. Any final words of wisdom for you before we send everybody off into the Week 17 abyss?
Don't book a train ride for Sunday morning of Week 17. Because,
oh, no, Brandon. Oh, no.
Yeah. It's going to be rough. I'll have
to ask.
Is
there Wi-Fi on this train?
There's supposed to be, but there generally isn't. So hopefully I can get my hotspot enough and just have a CSV uploaded in case of disaster.
Yeah. Good luck. Godspeed to you and your train. That sounds frightening. Once again, we will have preview podcasts all throughout the playoffs as we will preview next week's slate. Haven't discussed the day yet. Probably going to be Thursday still. So make sure you subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Make sure you get every podcast right as it is posted. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I am at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sanes, JimSanes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today and the entire regular season. Good luck in Week 17. Make sure you check all the latest news on Sunday morning to make sure everything is up to date. We'll talk to you in the playoffs. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.